Hey everybody, welcome into the second episode of GRCast. I think that's the official name we're going with now, because all the really great names I think are taken, right? At this point, how many podcasts are out there using fantastic names? So anyway, it's not really the name of the podcast that matters so much as the talent involved. And some of the talent I've got involved with me today is Matt Graukat.
Hello.
And Dio.
Hello, hello.
Anyway, I think we're going to go ahead and kick it off like we did last week with what you've been playing, and why don't we start with Matt this week?
No, I haven't had much time this week. I've mainly been focusing on two different games. First is Discworld, and it's kind of an old one, so I don't know how many people can kind of realize that there's a game based on Discworld. There's actually four, but I'm playing the first point one. It's a bit of a classic, because it's probably because of its voice cast. I mean, you've got Eric Idle playing Rincewind. The voice cast is Rob Brydon, before he was Rob Brydon. Tony Robinson, and there's some other people in there. But also, it's infamous because it is just one of the most difficult point-and-click games you want to name. There's a valid complaint about point-and-click games that sometimes the puzzles be a little bit overcomplicated. You need these items that perhaps you wouldn't naturally think that you would want to use. And Discworld is really the very pinnacle of that problem. I mean, there's the story's based on Guards Guards, one of the early Terry Pratchett books. And basically what it is that a sect have summoned a dragon. And as Rincewind, you have to stop that dragon. And you have to get a gold item from each of the sect members. And it is just one of the most difficult things. Five or six different sect members, and each have a gold object. And, for instance, there's one bit where there's you have to go into the shades, and there's a thief hiding in like a little crevice. But you can't actually get to there. You need a ladder. But you can't just put down a ladder. You have to soften the other end of the ladder so that it doesn't wake the thief up. To do this, you have to read a bit of graffiti on the inside of a toilet door, which says to go and see, which says you have to go and see Big Sally at a for a special brothel. Go and see Big Sally, and her special involves egg and flour and some other things. It's just basic ingredients to custard, and you have to travel the world trying to find the ingredients to custard. Then you give the ingredients to Sally. You go inside the brothel, you go with a bra, and you put the bra on the end of the ladder to soften as you drop the ladder. Now just imagine, this came out in 1993, 1994. There is no internet to find out how to do this. It would just drive you mad. And it sounds easy because I've just given you the linear version, but there is no indication of what you need, the ingredients. So, and that was actually one of the easier puzzles. It is a fantastic, it's got Eric Idle in, and it is so funny. And it's a very, it's very well made in terms of the world of the Discworld, and it's well worth a pay for pretty much anyone that's got the chance for it. My second game, Joe, you might want to do the fanfare, was, I've been playing the first Bioshock.
Oh yes. My god.
Ear pressure wins out. I'd fancied it since Infinite came out, I'll be honest. It got great reviews, and Infinite really be in the mood for it. So I was going to play it one way or another anyway, but Joe's bullying hit off.
It finally pays off.
I started it. Yeah.
Nice after, work, Joe.
After 4 years. I found something out about Bioshock fans this last week, and that is that, you know when you say something negative about Justin Bieber on Twitter? Well, if you say anything negative about Bioshock, yet so many people trying to tell you how little taste you have and how wrong you are. There is just these people. Everyone has an explanation for why you don't think Bioshock is the perfect game.
Well, they do have kind of a point.
They don't at all. Great game, and I'm really enjoying it. I think the atmosphere in the world is absolutely fantastic, is unparalleled, but the gameplay sucks ass. Anytime you have to fight more than one thing at a time, or anything that's got a little bit of speed. It is just obnoxiously difficult. And it's the controls that are against you. And I can see it being so easily fixed in Bioshock 2 and certainly in Bioshock Infinite. But at the minute, there are times where I just feel so frustrated. And it's a strong shooter, but it's not perfect. And I think there's a problem in the gaming industry right now where people are kind of going anti the big shooters. They're going anti-Battlefield and anti-Call of Duty. And I think this is kind of the other side of it, where they're not allowed to judge games that are deemed artistic or that are deemed higher purpose. We're not allowed to judge them by their faults. And you see it a lot with Journey last year, or Limbo. Limbo's the one that always brings me up, because that game got 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10. And it was like 15, 16 pounds. It was really expensive when it came out. And it was about 4 hours long, and it wasn't difficult. The bloody thing they did was put it in black and white. And it was nice, but it didn't deserve 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10. And I find the same with Bioshock in some ways.
I can agree with that in a way, because I actually just started playing Bioshock 1 again last night. I ordered the Ultimate Rapture Edition, which has Bioshock 1 and 2, and all of the DLC for both games on it. And I mostly got it because, well, I had just played Infinite. I finished Infinite, which was fantastic. And I wanted to go back and sort of compare between the two, the differences they've made and everything. And because Charles last week told me that the Minerva's Den DLC for Bioshock 2 was really good, I figured I'd try that out at the same time. And man, there are things about it, especially after playing Infinite, where it's like, this is strange. This seems old when when you're just like...
Yeah.
I mean, in Infinite, when you start shooting at people, they're diving for cover and like falling over, like, okay, we got to get out of the way of these bullets. In Bioshock, it sort of makes sense because they're basically just meth heads, right? But they just run at you. They don't even care about anything. Right into my machine guns, my grenades. I've got fire flying from my fingertips, and they're just like, doesn't matter. I'm coming up there to beat your face. All right, why don't we kick it over to Dio now and find out what he's been up to.
Yeah, this past week I've been going... I'm still playing Sly Cooper a decent time, just collecting bottles and everything. I love Sly. I grew up with Sly. It's just an unbelievable game for me. The team at Sunsara Games has done an unbelievable job, like putting all their love and effort and all their creativity into this game, possibly future titles. Have you guys played it, or...?
I haven't. What interests me is isn't the developer one that did the HD collection?
Yeah, it is. Basically, Sony didn't know what Sunsara were doing. While they were doing the HD trilogy, they just, because they're fans of the game, I'm assuming, and they just did this mock-up of Sly 4, and they presented it to Sony, and they liked it so much, and they actually gave greenlitted it.
I mean, that's a great story.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. I really hope they can continue this way.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that worried me with this fourth one is that the original team that built Sly went on to do Infamous.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and you know, Sly opened the door for so many other open world games, Assassin's Creed, the like. And I think a lot of people felt it was going to step back to just do Sly 4 like Sly 3.
Yeah, I was hoping it would be a little bigger, to be honest. But even so, it's just... You just have to admire what Sunsara have done, and the worlds are absolutely amazing, just stunning to look at, to explore, isn't it? And that's why I was so in between the 8.5 and the 9 for the review, which we discussed. And I eventually went with the 8.5, because they could have changed some things up. And they could add in multiplayer at some point, maybe co-op multiplayer. That would be a nice addition if it was done properly.
Whenever I see Sly, I want to play it. I played the HD collection. I don't think I finished any of the games, though. Maybe this is the new one that I should go and grab.
it's a pretty cheap price as well. Like, if you get with cross-buy and everything, it's 40 euro, 40 quid, I think.
Yeah.
And you get the Vita version for 3.
You guys need to quit trying to sell me on games to play. I'm too busy playing games from 4 years ago. I've already played multiple times. I've got probably 6 games sitting there on the shelf that I should be playing, and I'm not. I feel like I just want to hear on the podcast your list of games from the past that people have said are like the genre-defining experiences that you haven't played even 10 years later.
Wow, okay. Okay, so Half-Life 2.
You, at all?
No, you know, I mean, it came out at time... Okay, first, I tried to play the first Half-Life last year, and it has not aged well. And it's just one of those things that keeps getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed back.
There's no hope of you going through Half-Life 1 at this point. I mean, ugh. That game is good. Like, I remember playing Half-Life 1. I played it all the way through ages and ages and ages ago. But I had a hard time with it even when it was semi-relevant. I did the same thing. I played it because I was like, okay, I have to play Half-Life 2. And I finished Half-Life 1, and I feel like I remember sitting there going, why did I just play through this whole game? And then I fired up 2, and I hated it. So I didn't play it again for about 6 months or probably more than that. And then I thought, everybody loves this game. I must have missed something. So I fired it up again from the beginning, and I hated it. And I must have done that about 6 different times where I tried to play it, and I went, this game is so standard. Why does everyone think it's so good? You just walk from place to place, and guys lean out over the corner, whatever, you shoot them in the head, and you move on. It's boring. For some reason, like the 7th time I played that game, I really liked it. Matt, if you're not going to get sucked in right away to Half-Life 2, just take it off the list. You're never going to play it.
I'm trying to think what else there is that I've never played. I should have done.
The Blasphemers list, I think, is what most people will think of this as in the coming days and weeks.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting... Okay, I shouldn't say interesting. Here's a story about a retro game. I originally convinced my parents that I wanted... I think it was Genesis, because I saw commercials for a game, maybe you guys will be familiar with the game, called Toad Jam and Earl.
Oh, wow.
For some reason, I thought it looked like the coolest game ever, and so I was like, I have to have a Genesis, I have to play this game. They finally got me a Genesis. We used to go to the rental store, Blockbuster or whatever it was. I would always be looking for Toad Jam and Earl, and I would see the case there. Somebody would have checked it out, and I probably just liked the rad attitude that those two characters had, or whatever the hell it was. And despite constantly trying to get it, I never managed to rent that game, and to this day, I still have not played the game that I bought a Genesis in order to play. And I don't want to now.
You know, that is probably the first game that I remember playing. Like, if I go back 22 years, I have memories of that game. Except that I don't. I remember playing it, but when I actually... It came out on digital distribution services last year, and I bought it, and I tried it out, and it was like, this is not the game that I played. They have changed Toe Jam and Earl at some point over the last 20 years. This is not a game that I played. And to this day, I have no idea. I remember that it was Toe Jam and Earl that I played, but I don't remember what I've got it mixed up with. Because Toe Jam and Earl sucked, but the game that I got it mixed up with was fantastic. So, yeah.
Are you thinking of Booger Man, the seminal hit for Super Nintendo? You want to talk about games that were great back in the day? How about a game where you dress as a fat man in a green spandex suit, and then you eat a chili pepper to fart flames and fly around?
Where can I get that?
Oh, man. Yeah, games didn't used to be that good. Why do we all think that they were?
I don't know.
It's just the startup point for every now that has become big franchise. So... I guess, like, they just look back to that point as a starting point for, like, the greatness. Like, the Zelda games. Yeah,
I think they're an example of things that have held up well. I mean, you have to go in knowing that, oh, this game is going to be limited. But the original Final Fantasies, the original Zeldas, you can tell that they were struggling to do things with the technology that they had. Mm-hmm. But then you come across things that it was, like, just half-assed. It was just, like... Okay, this is the game we want to make, and this is what we can actually do. This is what we have the money to do.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. The video game industry wasn't even that big back then, was it?
No, well, that's it. I mean, it was, I remember watching an episode of Roseanne where they bought a Nintendo, and it was like the most expensive thing that the people had ever bought. And that would have been around the early 90s, sort of 90, 92, 93 that that episode aired. So there was obviously an awareness of what it was, and it was obviously popular enough to end up on Roseanne. You know, I think that we've come such a long way, and it's such a mainstream thing that now the people that were there at the beginning of the 90s liked people to know that they were there at the beginning of the... I actually made Metroid when it first came out.
Right.
I was there when The Legend of Zelda launched. And they kind of start believing what they're saying. I mean, I'm not going to be the person that says every single game this generation is fantastic, but I do get the feeling that on the whole, the quality has been more consistent this generation than perhaps any other before. I remember buying games on PS2 that lasted for about 2 hours, and I'd spent £40 on. I remember buying games on the N64 that would cost me probably $80 in today's money, and they would last me an hour and a half. I remember one game where I drove around knocking down buildings. It was basically a racing game, and that was all you'd do. Each map was exactly the same, and it cost me, because I liked the front of the box, £60.
Wow. Yeah.
And yet, these were the best games ever made.
You know,
in people's opinion.
I sort of feel like there's a little bit of, you had to think that every game back then was the best game ever made because you were a kid, and you had, if you got a game, it was either because you convinced your parents to get it for Christmas or your birthday, or like me, you got to go rent games or whatever, but new games were like few and far between. If you were, you had to enjoy every single one you got.
Yeah, there was definitely a that, for sure.
Don't we owe current generations and everything to that mindset, though? Because if everybody thought that each game was a load of crap, then there wouldn't have been such a boom in the industry. And
that's
this
true.
And that.
Yeah, I think it helps that, you know, people. We had the Resident Evil series as an example, and it was pretty popular. I think the first one sold, you know, a few million, which on the PS1 is all the more impressive. And obviously, over time, it got ported and it sold more and more and more. But there came a point. At the turn of the millennium, where there just was no one playing the Resident Evil games, they'd sell a million. You know, the remake, which everyone says is just this the best Resident Evil game, it sold 1.5 million copies. Everyone that has played it, pretty much everyone that has played it, has bought it pre-owned in the years since.
Wow.
And that came out in 2002, 2003. Came out in the same year that the film came out. And the first film is pretty dreadful. It's fine if you want to watch a zombie film, but there's not much more to it. It's that sitting there with some popcorn and shouting, "He's behind you, there's a zombie," and that's about it. And that is the point of that film. And yet, it pretty much made the Resident Evil series successful again. Resident Evil 4 sold 7 million copies. And a lot of that is down to the fact that Resident Evil became higher in the public consciousness. And I think that's a lot. When you start getting consciousness, that sort of consciousness start to get people to be more accepting of a genre or of a medium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it could have been. Speaking of Resident Evil, I tried playing 4, and like we mentioned last podcast, where you said you have a problem with like survival horror games. Like for example, Dead Space and Resident Evil 4, there was no way I could possibly get through the first level of those games.
No.
I don't understand how I'm the only person who loves horror games out of almost everyone
when,
I know.
When I was a kid, I watched my dad play Resident Evil, and you know, I'm happy to sit there and watch someone else play it, but I don't like feeling, I like to relax, and I don't like feeling like the developer is trying to find ways to make me jump, because I think that's really cheap. If I'm staring at something and a face just comes up at the screen, that's going to have a reaction on my heart rate and on blood pressure and all that. You know, that just a natural reaction. I don't like thinking that that's the whole point of the game. And I never felt that the Resident Evil series was strong enough as a game to, until 4, that it was strong enough as a game to go beyond that. You know, the gameplay wasn't great. The story was bloody stupid. I don't care what anyone says. The storyline to those games matches Metal Gear Solid with the just ridiculousness. And that's a lot down to the script. Come, little fishy, sit on my hook. And, you know, I've sat there, I beat Code Veronica, and I've watched my girlfriend play them all in the last 12 months. And not so much that it's the horror, that other than the horror, there's not a lot there. I saw a played space, and again, other than the horror, there's not a lot there. Bioshock, I'm not even really thinking as a horror game.
I think
there's a sense of dread in the game, but not much of horror around it.
Yeah, and I think if they could build a game, I'm trying to think of, you know, there was a add-on DLC pack for Heavy Rain called The Taxidermist. Mm-hmm. Thinking back, went inside a house because you thought it was the origami, and played as, and I forget her name. No, it's gone. Anyway,
some
played
girl.
Her, and some girl. And went inside this house, and there is just stuffed animals everywhere. And you explore, and you go up to the top floor, and there's just a bunch of women that have been stuffed and put into various poses. And then the guy comes in downstairs, and he is searching the house. He can see that someone's been in there, and he's searching the house for you. And you have to move while he's looking for you. And that's about as close to proper horror as I've felt while playing a game, because the tension was just fantastic. And come to think of it, the stealth genre as a whole, probably the best for that, because it comes out of nowhere. You get a sense that someone is hunting for you. Maybe something like Manhunt, which is another one I've never been should have done. Maybe something like Manhunt. I kind of get the feeling that that would have that feeling a lot more.
You know, I've been a detractor of Heavy Rain at certain points, but you can say what you want about that game, but those points where you are doing something and then all of a sudden they split the screen and they show you what somebody else is up to, and you know at some point these two people are going to collide with spectacularly terrible results, those were the best parts of that game, I think.
Yeah, as a whole, it was just an amazing game.
It was good. Joe told me how fantastic it was. I bought it a few days later, and because obviously he's in the States, he told me how fantastic it was. This is going to be the best game ever, blah, 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 blah. Then I bought it, and I didn't speak to him for a few days. And then the next time I spoke to him, I said, you were completely right. I played through Heavy Rain. It blew me away. And he said, I've been reading online, and actually I hate it now. And that's so you can't take Joe's opinion on Heavy Rain too seriously.
Okay, I feel I need to break this down now. I still like that game. In fact, if I could pick that game up for dirt cheap, it's been long enough that if I played it again, I would really, really probably like it. But I feel like that's one of those games where if I had just played it once, and whatever happened, and I just drew a line under it and said, that's it. It would have been great, even though I got the worst possible ending. I mean, everyone who was not the killer was dead or disgraced in some way. And the killer just, like, wandered off. Like, oh, I did a great job, I guess. Woohoo! And, like, wandered off into the sunset. But there were so many points in that game where they did these strange things. And the one that bothers me the most, even now, is there's a point where the girl, like, I don't remember her name either, she's talking to the killer's mom, and the mom leans in and whispers the name of the killer to her. And to me, that was amazing, because I assumed that the choices you had made throughout the game would lead to her whispering a different name to her each time. Like, depending on what you did, it could be this guy, it could even be the FBI guy or whatever. And I was like, this is amazing, I can play this game 4 different times, make different choices, and it'll be a different killer every time or whatever. And then that turned out not to be the case. It's always the same guy. That was really frustrating to me, because why were we still keeping it a secret from the player at that point? She could have just said it out loud if it was not going to be different people, potentially, each time. It kind of makes me wonder if they planned to have it be different people, and then they didn't have time, or they didn't think they could make it work story-wise.
It was the guy that everyone liked. That's part of the problem as well. They made him such a likable guy till the last, kind of, 30 minutes, if that.
Right, yeah. As you, there was a pretty big disconnect, I feel like, between the times you played as him, and he seemed like such a good guy. Like you said, I would go out of my way to do all of the nicest things with him. And then at the end, it just seemed like, oh, actually, he's the murderer. Just because of some strange, like, trauma he suffered as a child. He's the nicest guy ever until it rains, and then he really wants to murder somebody by drowning.
Twist. Heavy Rain is actually Gremlins in disguise.
Yeah,
I think I finally understand that game now.
I'm looking forward
spoiler
to the,
by the way.
Looking forward to the next one. Beyond Two Souls or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, that looks good. I was excited by that because it's got Ellen Page in. I really quite like her as an actress, and I think that she's always done kind of roles that suit her. So I think that choosing this means that it's going to be at least passable in terms of the story, and in terms of the acting, it's going to be stellar.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I remember reading when that game was first announced, or shortly after it was announced, there was somebody who wrote an article about it, and he was frustrated because, for people who don't know, there's in the game you play as a ghost or something, and you can possess different people to like help her get through the situation she's in or something. I'm not 100% clear on it, but I know that somebody asked David Cage from Quantic Dream, the guy who comes up with all these crazy games, how come you can only possess like some people and not other people? Is there like a cool storyline reason, or is it just like arbitrary? You only can possess these people because I only want you to possess these people. And David Cage said, oh, it's just arbitrary. There's no story reason for it. I just don't want you possessing some people. Before we finish this out, I wanted to make sure we touch on the guy who went on Twitter strangely defending the always-on Xbox, even though they haven't officially said that it's true yet. Have they? I don't think.
No, they haven't. And it was quite interesting because a Major Nelson, I'm actually going to look this up because I don't want to put words to anyone's mouth. But Major Nelson, once all of this had kicked off, he made a post on his blog. Okay, here we go. It's just called Official Statement on What Was Said Yesterday. Okay. So, I wanted to give you the official Microsoft statement regarding some comments you may have seen yesterday. We apologize for the inappropriate comments made by an employee on Twitter yesterday. This person is not a spokesperson for Microsoft, and his personal views do not reflect the customer-centric approach we take to our products or how we would communicate directly with our loyal customers. We are sorry if this offended anyone. However, we have not made any announcements about our product roadmap and have no further comment on this matter. So that's the official statement. Now, I just want to point out that that's all fine in PR lingo, but they don't actually say that what he said wasn't true.
Yeah. Taking into consideration what customers think and everything, watch the Xbox announcement be pushed back a couple of months just to fix that.
It's frustrating whenever you know what's going on, when if someone is saying something that is perceived as inherently negative by most consumers, I would say, I don't think there's anybody like, yeah, always on is fine. I don't mind playing Skyrim only when my internet works or whatever. I mean, there might be some people who go, I don't mind it, but I don't think there's anyone saying, yes, it should absolutely be this way among consumers, among developers maybe. But whenever there's something like this that everyone seems to think is negative, if I was a company and it wasn't true, I would just come out and shut it down. I would say, this isn't true. Unless they just want the press, they figure any sort of press is decent press as long as their name is out there or something. But they don't say that. They just say, we haven't made an announcement, which is the same as saying, yeah, this is all true.
They could be trying to lower expectations. And then suddenly at the press conference, suddenly everything's amazing and everything's just working perfectly. No internet connection required, this and that. It could just be like PR.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible, but I think there's going to be a lot of people pre-ordering the PS4 now who perhaps were waiting on it.
Everyone seems to think, if you have good internet, if you live where broadband is, you know, widely used, it seems like everyone in the world has it, until you don't. Like, I lived for years, and I had broadband. It wasn't a big deal. And then I moved literally less than, like, 2 miles away, and now I have satellite. They don't run cable lines here. I mean, that's why my internet connection's so terrible. The internet connection just dies, and the router has to be reset 3 or 4 times a day just because. I mean, so I'm not buying an Xbox that has to be connected all day. I'm not going to stop playing a game because the thing goes out. Save it. Turn the machine off so it doesn't kick me out within 3 minutes, then go upstairs, unplug the router, unplug the modem, wait for 5 minutes each, plug it all back in, hope it connects, and then go back downstairs, turn on my Xbox for 10 minutes, load the game back up. Oh, the internet's out again. Fuck you.
Well, I'm all for PlayStation Plus. I really enjoy the Plus service.
Plus has been, when I first came out, I was skeptical about it, I think. But, man, you're making money in games by paying that each month. It's crazy how much stuff they give you for free.
It's unbelievable, yeah. I got The Cave for free this last week, and I'm so glad I did not pay for that. I didn't really like it.
I quite enjoyed it. It was nice so long as you remember that these are the people that made Monkey Island 20 years ago.
I tried to play it through with that mindset, and at some point it just got so tedious because you know with the three characters you have to go back and forth and back and forth.
I've done that.
I was like, oh god, when is it going to end?
I just tried to think that perhaps in terms of that there was absolutely no progression over the last 20 years except that you can play it with a controller now. That's the way I went in with it, and I wasn't disappointed. It was pretty much what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, fair enough.
So 20 years ago, they made Monkey Island, and at the same time, they were playing The Lost Vikings, and they thought, we should combine these, and 20 years later, they finally managed it, and now you're upset because it doesn't work that well.
I enjoyed it, don't get me wrong. I thought the dialogue was very funny. The cave actually has a voice.
Yeah, I love the dialogue. Yeah.
And it is so funny, so well written. And it's just a shame that I'm going to say this, and Joe, you're going to hate me for it, but I've never thought that Tim Schafer is that great a developer.
I have to agree with you. I would have to. I think he comes off as a little obnoxious as well.
Brutal Legend is terrible.
Yeah, it's not that good. But it's Psychonauts, and Psychonauts is the game. That's the game you want to play if you like Tim Schafer, and even now it's been so long.
It's kind of a one-hit wonder, though, when you think about it.
Grim Fandango was fantastic. Monkey Island was fantastic.
Maniac Mansion's where it's at. Love that game. Day of the Tentacle Boat.
That's before my time, Joe.
Yeah, I'm an old one. I remember playing Maniac Mansion on the NES, using the little D-pad to scroll a mouse down to the bottom to say pick up, and then scroll it back up to the key, and then scroll back down to use in, and then scroll up to the door, and it was like, ugh. I'd still play it right now, probably, but man, it would be frustrating. Okay, somehow we started this talking about games like Bioshock Infinite, now we're talking about Maniac Mansion. I think it's time to call it quits. Yeah, so we'll put a cap on it for this week, and we'll presumably be back next week. Hopefully the quality will be a little better next week. I should be getting a mic. Everything's going to be great. I'm telling you, this show is really growing. People are going to love it. But for this week, thanks for joining me, fellas.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
The star.
Oh, don't stop now. You've only scratched the surface of my greatness.
You're the most beautiful, attractive podcast host that has ever been.
All right, that's it. We're out.